Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 15% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes. TPU upper design allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, show jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, 15% off a pair of Treks. Use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. Earlier this year, I decided to start interviewing friends and colleagues with horses that have had hoof issues in order to do a sort of success story series on the podcast. We've talked about high-low cases, we've talked about a laminitic eventer, and in this episode, I talk with Carla Anderson. Carla is a hoof care provider based in Wisconsin, and she owns the Gentle Equine LLC. And she, just like me, used to be a teacher, but decided to learn to trim her own horses, again, just like me. And she started thinking that she would just trim her own, but like most of us, it turned into more. And she took a special focus and passion for horses that are dealing with insulin resistance or PPID or both. She is not a veterinarian, but has been dealing with these metabolic issues since 2013, and she follows the same protocol that I do for these kind of metabolic cases that we find on ecirhorse.org with Dr. Kellen and the great ECIR group to get these horses sounding comfortable. So I spoke with Carla about a case that she worked on and how she ended up getting this horse back to comfort. So why don't we get started, and can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you became interested in hoof care?
Yes. Well, I'm a special ed teacher, a retired special education teacher, and my vet came to do a chiropractic adjustment on my horse, and she stopped dead in her tracks, and she looked down at her feet, and she said, when is the last time she was trimmed? And I said, 3 days ago. And she wasn't impressed because there was, you know, the hind feet were flared. One of my farriers, Cupcake, was having a laminitic episode. I was a client that was on a 6-week schedule always. And she had a flare up and he never called me back for like 2 weeks. And so I, you know, a couple of those events had happened, and then I decided, you know, I'm just going to do this myself. So I think I was about 50 and 57, and I took classes with Ida Hammer.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. That's great. And so do you now do your own horses or do you trim for other people?
I actually do both.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of us get into hoof care because of our own horses or mm-hmm. having to deal with something that, you know, catches us by surprise and then becoming kind of obsessed with it. So
Right.
So was that horse that you were talking about that your vet came to see, was that Cupcake?
No, that was a quarter horse mare that I have.
Okay. Well, I know that I want to talk today a little bit about a laminitic case that you worked on. So Was it one of your own horses?
Yeah.
So, you know, when did it start and what did her first symptoms look like when she became laminitic?
Yes. Her name is Cupcake. She is my pony. And this was back in 2013. She was not on grass. We have, you know, dry lots. It's not if they're going to get it, it's when usually. And so I always knew that, was very careful with her. And she just got a little footy. And then it just progressed, and I had her tested, and her test came back 200 plus.
For the insulin?
Yes, with insulin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The results were sent to a local lab here in Wisconsin, and they came back 200 plus, and I called my vet back, and that ended up being a pretty tumultuous discussion, unfortunately, because I was advocating for cupcake, and I was told that at a recent convention, anything between 200 and 400 in an insulin level was normal.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. And then I called our local lab, which I believe it was like 1 to 10. I'm not entirely sure the recollection there. And then I said, well, if this is the case, why are your reference ranges so low if 200 to 400 are normal? And they said, you know, they basically said they couldn't discuss this with me. I would have to discuss this with my veterinarian. So I called my veterinarian back, and I was not taking no for an answer. I said, you know, ponies are notorious for metabolic, and she's sore, and she does not have grass. And then she just said, I don't know what to tell you. She raised her voice at me. And so then I went to the World Wide Web and found the ECIR group, and I sent them my results, and they said, your pony is severely IR and you need to get her on the emergency diet, which I did.
Yeah. And so from there, I try to implement that for all my clients, but can you tell us, or tell those who might not know what that is, what the emergency diet is?
Sure. Been a long time, but it's basically, it's on their website, removing any sugars or starches in the diet, magnesium, salt, flax, soaking hay. And then when you can, you should be testing your hay. If you can, you know, it's kind of a challenge for some. I did, because I buy all my own hay, big bales. And that's what I did. She didn't receive any grain anyway, so I didn't have to remove that. But I soaked her hay and I did the flax and the salt. And, we went from there. It's been a long journey.
Yeah. And so did that help for when you started the emergency diet? Did you see an improvement in comfort?
Yes. Yes, I did. I think the soaking of the hay was huge, because at that time, I never really had like a grass alfalfa, you know, a strong alfalfa mix. But I think the soaking helped. Then I ended up taking the nutrition courses that Dr. Kellen offers. And I had a lady balance my hay here in Wisconsin. And then she made a remarkable change with that balancing.
Oh, interesting. That's awesome. And so you think that the mineral balancing really sort of took it to the next level?
It did. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then it sustained her for many years. And then it's been an up and down until, I would say, maybe 5 years ago, 3 years ago now, we're good. But she's 29 years old, so.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So once she was on the emergency diet, did you see her insulin levels drop to the more manageable levels? Or what did that look like? Did you end up testing her again?
Yes, I did. That I would not have a recollection of, but they did lower for sure.
Oh, that's good.
To what value? I'm not sure. I want to say they were maybe like high 20s.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that that's something that I struggle with, or not that I struggle with myself, but with working with owners off property, especially with veterinarians, because the lab ranges are pretty high in comparison to what I see that correlating to comfort. So I think the insulin lab ranges go up to like 40 as normal. And I see horses on my property that are, you know, I had one mare move in that was 28 and she was very foot sore. And the last time we tested her, she's been doing better. Last time we tested her, she was at 9. So, which is great. I mean, she like, you know, is on tested hay and she lives on a track. So she has to move miles a day. So that helps. But yeah. I think that if the owner had just stuck with like, okay, well, 28 is good, it's within range, and didn't try to change anything else, I don't know that she would have become more comfortable, if that makes sense.
Right. Yes.
So that's something that I feel like I don't know. It's mm-hmm. the ECIR group has been amazing at educating me on that and helped me kind of explore more if there's a horse that's sore and not kind of fitting that mold of like, well, you know, this is technically mm-hmm. all good. So
mm-hmm. like on paper.
Right, right.
Yes.
So after that, in terms of, you know, you did the emergency diet and she seemed a little bit more comfortable. Was that sort of like where it ended and she was all good from there? Or was there any hiccups or how did that look?
Oh, yes. We've had a lot of hiccups. She was in clogs for a while. This was really early on. And then she, can't remember the year. It's been a while. I would say like maybe 2017 or 16. She went pretty sideways and she ended up living in my indoor arena for a year or better part of a year. And her feet just got really distorted and she was still on the diet, you know, that was tested, hay and balanced, and she just wasn't getting any better. And then I contacted Dr. Kellen and that's when she was put on Invokana. Like, I think we're going on 4 years now.
Oh, 4 years on Invokana?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that one, so it's interesting because that's, you know, one of the SGLT2 inhibitors for people that right. might not know what that is. Right. A few years ago, I'm trying to remember if it was 4 years ago. I think it was only 3 years ago. I had a handful of clients that were part of the Tufts trial for Steglatro, which is another SGLT2 mm-hmm. inhibitor. And it was a similar where I had these horses that most of them were on a pretty, what you consider a safe diet and mm-hmm. Pretty good management, but still had, you know, some of them were like foundering and we just couldn't get them to stop. Mm. And with the Steglatro, I had a few that were like within days comfortable. Is that what, did you see a similar result?
Yes. Yes, she did. I would say it was about a week and a half and her numbers continue to be high. I test her twice a year and with the triglycerides, but she's sound and she's happy beside.
That's interesting. In terms mm-hmm. of like, so I have one horse on Steglatro that his insulin is still high, but he's been, I mean, knock on wood, he's been yeah. really sound. So that is interesting that it doesn't seem like it necessarily correlates to the blood work results, their comfort, I mean.
Right, right. And that, I guess, was a little shocking to me because she was sound and then her test came back and she was like, you know, at one point she was 120.
Wow.
She was still sound. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. And have you had any of the issues? I know you mentioned testing for triglycerides, but I know mm-hmm. one of the concerns is that hyperlipidemia. Have you had any concerns mm-hmm. about liver issues with?
No.
That's good.
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And the only other issue or potential issue that I've seen is that I had one client whose horse dropped weight very quickly on it. And he kind of got ribby and lost some top line. But I think I know that Dr. Kellen will say that you shouldn't restrict the diet too much if they're going on one of these right. drugs because it can cause them to lose weight. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't had any of that either. And I weigh her hay. And when she comes in at night, I stall mine at night. She gets 5 pounds. I weigh it. However, she is on a big bale that is netted with a drum mare and a draft mule, Molly.
And she does well?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. She's barefoot.
That's great. Did you notice any changes with her? Did she have, I guess I should start by saying, did she have a lot of hoof distortion when she was sore and laminitic, or did she have pretty typical feet, or did you notice any hoof changes after getting her more under control?
I love that question because yes, it was crazy. So she had these really upright, long feet, you know, they were just morphing and distorted. And once we put her on the Invokana, they just came right down. All the inflammation came out and she could be trimmed, you know, like a normal animal. It was really quite impressive, to say the least.
That's awesome. Did you see the really fast growth that I sometimes see with horses that have high insulin? Like sometimes they just seem like they're shooting out foot and you could trim them every two weeks. Yes. Did she have that too? Did that typically, or did that resolve once she was under control?
Yes, it did. Yep. Now she can be on a regular 4-week, you know, cycle.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's something that I almost use as not a diagnostic, but a sort of diagnostic when I come to horses that it feels like they're just shooting out foot, and obviously the soreness that will correlate to that. But I have owners that say like, oh, well, you know, they foundered a while ago, so they're always going to have weird feet or like fast growth. And I try to tell them that once it's under control, they should really go back to a more normal hoof growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She did. And now that you say that, that is interesting because I have particularly donkeys. When you say that is kind of a symptom, and completely agree, because there are times where I'll come back to a donkey that's on a regular schedule, 5 or 6 week schedule, depending on the farm. And I'm like, oh, what has happened? What has changed? Because that foot just distorts.
Yeah. I do trim a lot of donkeys, but honestly, I'm less versed in donkey, like the metabolic management of donkeys, because I know that they metabolize medications differently. And I know that even Dr. Kellen has said their blood work results can look a little different for at least for like ACTH and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely something that can warrant more investigation. I just don't have a lot of information on everything in terms of the diagnostics and things like that.
Right. Yeah, I think those are big questions that, you know, they're sorting out. You know, there's lots of good work done on the donkeys and mules. And I'd like to also share, to go back the in between. So my vet, then I had switched vets, like from the, you know, from the very beginning to this next one. And we did gabapentin, metformin, Tylenol. I mean, we did it all. And really, I was looking at euthanasia or Invokana.
Wow.
And I had called, and the reason I want to share this to listeners is because now it's not a struggle. Like my vets around here are kind of like going right to the Invokana or the SGLT2 inhibitor, where before they weren't. So I had called, we have a major hospital, you know, our university hospital said no. Another equine hospital said no. They wouldn't put her on the Invokana. Another equine hospital said no. They wouldn't put her on Invokana, and I couldn't get her on it.
Wow.
And this was just 3 years ago.
Wow.
And I had met a veterinarian that works with a local donkey rescue. And I thought, you know, I bet he'll do it. I bet he'll do it. And I called him and connected him with Dr. Kellen via the emails. And because at this point, Dr. Kellen agreed that we were kind of at the end. You know, there was nothing more we could really do. I had done everything that I could. And then she's like, yes, let's try the Invokana. So I called him and I said, this is my situation. I've met you. And he literally within minutes said, sure, why not?
Wow.
And yeah, it was really, really tough to find somebody to prescribe it for her.
Yeah.
But he did.
I think, I mean, even in my area, a lot of vets were hesitant when, especially when Dr. Kellen first started talking about it, because it was years and years ago, years before Tufts picked up a trial. And I think a lot of people were very skeptical, but now that it has more research behind it and there are people that have actually done published studies on it, it seems like you said, vets are now willing to go right to that.
Right.
But did you see, so how quickly did you see the comfort return on the Invokana?
Oh, a week and a half.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really quite quick, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. What area are you based out of?
Just north of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay. And is
So
it,
45 minutes north.
and do you typically have pretty good vets in that area?
We do. We have very good vets in our area. Unfortunately, I'm in a gray little zone where like the major equine veterinarians, I'm out of their radius, unfortunately. But I have a very, very good clinic that I work with, but they do all large animals,
Yeah.
not just strictly horses, equines.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because I was wondering when you were talking about, calling around to all these different vets, what that looked like in terms of options you had in your area. Because I know that there are some people that really don't have many options for equine vets. There's some real dead zones for that in the country. So.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree, yes.
And so is your vet now, are they more open to ECIR type stuff? I know that you said they're willing to prescribe the Invokana, but are they, how do they feel about that kind of approach?
Well, the vet that prescribed it for her, he just sees her on that just strictly that basis to do the testing and follow up with her. And he has referred other people, clients, because he does a mixed practice as well. So he does bovine and equine.
Awesome. I mean, that's so
And the
good. Oh,
bovine
sorry.
is more of his specialty.
Oh, okay. That's so interesting. So, did you have any difficulty originally with, people kind of adopting the more like Dr. Kellen ECIR approach for the vets you're working with?
Yes, initially with the first veterinarian, quite a bit, and that's where I ended up having to go to the web and finding the ECIR group. And then I had contacted a vet that I had used in the past. No, let me back up. It was the same vet that was kind of, took me to the end of the road. Well, she had another veterinarian there, and I specifically said to her, I'm like, I have to be able to follow the CCIR group protocol with you. Like, this needs to be, me, you, and the ECIR group. And she completely agreed. And she took, I think I was with her for about 6 years until Cupcake went pretty sideways. And then she would not put her on Invokana. She said that she, there wasn't enough information on it.
Okay.
And that's when I could no longer really use her. And then I had to find somebody that would prescribe the Invokana. And that was when I found the other veterinarian.
Yeah, and I think that that's a lot of the objections I see to some of the protocol for ECIR is that, like, well, there's not enough information on it, which is it's frustrating because ECIR has a database with thousands of case histories starting from almost 30 years ago. And I know that it's not like I feel like a lot of the vets who know about that say, well, it's not, peer reviewed. And but ultimately, I mean, studies obviously cost money and sometimes they're just too slow. They're behind what the actual evidence is showing. They don't get published before we can, by the time we need the information, I guess.
No, I absolutely agree 100% because that is the struggle. Like I did have another vet here doing acupuncture on her. And so I even tried acupuncture on her as well. And she too was, like they just dismiss it. And I'm like, how can you dismiss, I think, what do they say, 12,000 plus case studies? And
Oh,
I
I didn't
think
realize
that
it was 12,000. Yeah.
I believe it is. And so that's my comeback to anybody that's a bit, stuck with that, is I'll say there is no individual clinic, and specifically in this area, that deals with that kind of level of data and information. And anyone that joins the ECIR group with an animal that's suffering, we have to fill out case studies. You know, we have to fill out forms and any changes and things like that. So they just don't give free information. It's very, you know, data driven.
Right, exactly. And I know that all of the volunteers who, you know, help with the ECIR forum, they're always telling people to update their case histories yes. and input all the information, how they can't really give specific advice mm-hmm. without having all those blood work results and like everything that the owner has already done, because ultimately, you know, they have to know that, you know, it's not just something mm-hmm. that we can just have a shot in the dark and try something. Really, they're the first step of their protocol is diagnosis. So,
Yes.
You have to have all the information. So, yeah,
it is. And as a trimmer, I'm sure you see it also all the time, is like, I'll give people the information and the animal is just not turning around or slowly going downhill. And I have one specific case right now, and they were listening and hearing me, but they weren't following the ECIR things that I was sending them. And finally it went pretty bad, where they had to call the vet. And, you know, in my back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, what did the veterinarian do? You know, because I know what they did, nothing, because you're not following the protocol, in my opinion, right? And so then the horse, you know, ended up getting bad enough that they had to call the vet. So then they did. They started soaking the hay. You know, the feet are turning around because they're making those changes. And you, like you said, you can see it in the feet either way. If it's going sideways or, you know, correcting based on, you know, them using,
right,
you know, proper protocols.
Yeah, exactly. And I know I'm going to botch this, but I know Dr. Kellen has said before, you know, halfway measures get halfway results. And
yes.
And it's not that, like, a lot of people, you know, say that they're doing the ECIR protocol, but really it's so truly individual to each horse mm-hmm. because you have to adjust it based on things like the blood work and the hay tests
right.
and each individual case. So I don't know that people understand. It's not just, I implemented the emergency diet and it's not working. Well,
right.
I mean, did they really implement it? Number one. Yes. But also, you know, what's their understanding of the emergency diet? But also, you know, what happened after that? Like you're saying with Cupcake, you had to investigate more and do other changes. And it's not just, you know, we did this and it didn't work. I love that ECIR is willing to kind of troubleshoot and step in and keep searching for answers, which is great.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. They are a godsend to us. I mean, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's all kind of like the main questions I have. But did you have any advice that you kind of want to impart on horse owners or hoof care providers that are struggling with a laminitic case?
You know, I think that I'm the type of person I don't leave any stone unturned. And I feel that all horse owners should be that way, because I think you made a good point of, like, you know, at least try it. And I think that the fact that they just have so much data, and I don't know that they'll ask a question, they'll want your opinion, like as far as a trimmer. And we give the opinion, or we give the information, the resources, and they just kind of look at, you know, yeah, thank you, the horse owner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. And with the internet and all of this, like, natural, you know, like different herbs or whatever that isn't recommended, they kind of go that way. So that's what I really struggle with some of the owners. And that's why when I take on a case, I'm very specific about, this is what I'm going to be giving you. What are your thoughts? Because what happens in my situation, I don't know if it happens to you, but I'll say, well, this is what I would recommend, right? Based on the ECIR, safe choices of food and things. And then they'll say, well, this is what I'm going to use. My vet told me to use this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, well, you know, and again, back to the halfway measure, or, you know, her motto, halfway measures get halfway results, something to that effect.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And talking about, you know, owners that aren't maybe implementing all the suggestions that we've seen to be successful time and again. I think that, you know, I have a trimmer friend down in Georgia who has had, you know, a hard time at times getting owners to sort of jump all in on that. And one thing that she said to one client and had told me about it was like, just give me, you know, two cycles, just give me these, like, whatever, yes. Right. 8 to 10 weeks, just do it all in for those 8 to 10 weeks. And then if we're at the same spot, that's fine. You know, right. we'll do something else. But everything else hasn't worked. And if anything, you're going to be in the same spot or it's going to be much better. So just try this and we can discuss even at the next trim if it's, you know, progressing or not. So I kind of liked that and sort of adopted it. That was just like, listen, if this is what we're going to do, like, I know it might be different than what you're hearing from all different sides, because obviously the people have opinions everywhere. Like, you know, everyone's going to say something different.
Yes.
But if this is something, if I'm part of your team and we're working mm-hmm. together, we really have to work together. It can't be like at odds because of, you know, it can't have something that's kind of sabotaging the rehab because it's just not safe or not something that's going to be beneficial for their feet. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it can be tricky, but. Yeah, I totally agree.
No, I like that. I like that. You know, that's a great idea to say, let's just give it this time stamp. You know, let's give it this kind of duration and see where we're at. I like that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being willing to chat about Cupcake and your experiences and the ECIR. And I really appreciate hearing all these experiences and just, you know, giving hope to owners that there are things you can do.
There are for sure. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Of course. Anytime.
You well, have a you. Great day.
Thanks. Welcome. You too.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person. And chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.